is the Last Minute Blues Podcast with Jeff Burton, Donnie Fandango, and former Blues defenseman Jamie Rivers.
It is the Last Minute Blues Podcast. Donnie Fandango, Jeff Burton from 105.7 The Point, and our freaking homeboy, former Blue and now team member over at 101 ESPN, Jamie Rivers. Boys, I need sports. I need sports badly.
So do I. I watched, it was an old, I just happened to fall run across on, I think it was MLB Network the other day, and it was an old Cardinals, well, obviously an old, Cardinals versus Milwaukee back in 2014, I think it was, and it was all the old names from the Cardinals that were there, and then I got really sad because on deck was, now I can't think of his name. The left fielder who was supposed to be our left fielder, or I'm sorry, our right fielder for a million years.
Oscar Tavares.
Tavares, whatever. They were like, oh, this young kid's going to be amazing, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, my gosh, so sad.
Yeah.
So ridiculously. He died, and then his girlfriend or wife died in a car wreck, right?
Yeah, man, I think she was like 18 or something, man. I mean, she was really young.
Yeah, as was he.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
As was he. He wasn't like 40 or anything.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I just need new sports. I need new hockey. I need new baseball.
Let me ask you this, Jamie. All right? We see a couple things. We see in Major League Baseball players seemingly being a little on the fence. Hockey players seem to be a little more unified, but you definitely will still see some of that fear creeping in, which is obviously very natural. Do you still see baseball and hockey starting in August, and finishing.
Wow.
And I know that's a lot, man. No. But it's dude, and Jeff and I have talked about it too. Mm-hmm. As much as we love this and want it back, boy, oh boy, it seems like we're not there yet, and the road to get there seems like it's still far.
It's like eating that big-ass bowl of cereal or something. You're enjoying it, but you're feeling guilty before it's even over. You're already feeling guilty about it. It's like, yeah, I want to watch hockey. I want to watch baseball. The other stuff I don't really care about. But those two sports I want to watch, but are we putting us in harm's way just because we want to watch sports?
So for hockey being the little brother of the other three major sports in the United States, obviously NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, and then the NHL is kind of like down just a little bit, right? I know we don't feel that way, but that's kind of revenue-wise and all that.
So. Yeah.
That's the way they're viewed. They got their shit together, guys.
It sounds like
they really do. They've got two great hub cities in Edmonton and Toronto. They've created as much of a bubble as they can. And here's where they're different from the other leagues right now. They've flat out said, we are going to enforce rules and protocols like you've never seen before, almost military style. You cannot leave unless you have given a notification to your floor correspondent and get off the floor. And then if you're going somewhere, they have special drivers and vans and whatever that are designated for that. They have certain times that you go eat. You have a certain pantry that they're going to make out of one of the rooms with prepackaged foods, and you have to schedule everything. And the players are like, okay, fine. The other leagues aren't doing that. Like, the NBA has this bubble that they're trying to make it look like, oh, we're fine. We're all by ourselves here. No, the park is open just down the street, for one thing. The employees who are in your area, they're coming and going every day, and they're not being tested. Mm-hmm. They don't have any kind of a perimeter involved, so the players could just walk out of Disney World anytime they want.
Well, why are they even going there then?
Well, because there's a lot of money on the line.
Well, that's a good point.
And Major League Baseball, to me, that's the biggest craziness I've seen, because they're not even trying for a hub anything or a bubble. Like, they're going to play in their own cities. They're going to live in their houses. They're going to travel to other cities. They're allowed in their mandates. They're allowed to use an Uber or a Lyft.
This is Major League Baseball?
Major League Baseball. So can you imagine that? You get a young guy out there, right? Jeff, we hung out when I was young.
Yeah.
You get a young guy out on the road. He's had a few cold ones, even over dinner with just his teammates. It only takes that one teammate. Hey, let's go grab a beer over there.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're not supposed to go over there. That'll be all right.
You know what it's going to take? I'll tell you what it's going to take. One super hot chick.
Well, that's the point.
Why don't you come over here?
Hey, look, my dad told me a long time ago. He says, a country dog will die running 10 miles just to get a little bit of that action.
I think I was there when he said it.
Yeah. He may have actually been looking.
We were walking out of church.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, oh, boy. That's scary. And it's amazing to me that these different entities are doing things so differently. And I understand that some seasons had already started and now they're pausing. Some didn't start. But still, that whole you can come and go as you want, that makes no sense.
It's craziness, guys. It's craziness. And the one thing I will say about the NBA, even though they're playing with fire with the way they're doing things right now, them and the NHL are just playoffs, right? So their track is a lot shorter. Major League Baseball, they've got to do all the 60 games. Then there's postseason, and they're going to do all this without any kind of a bubble around them. So I do think that the NHL will start. I believe the NHL will finish. The NBA, I'm on the fence. I don't think Major League Baseball will finish. But for us, especially with our Blues, the biggest period of time is going to be, well, from now, but starting Monday when it's training camp, till August 1st when they get to the bubble. That's going to be the hardest part because you're going to have all the guys back in the same city. They're going to be at the facility practicing together. And then after that, they're going to go grab lunch. It's a tight-knit group. And from there, Donnie, to your point, all it takes is going to grab lunch at a local establishment. Some beautiful woman walks by, gives a little bit of a little respect to the boys as she goes by. Now, all of a sudden, somebody's like, hey, wait a minute.
Whoa.
And now you have a team that's, you know, at risk because of that decision. So to get them from the start line, which is Monday, to the finish line, which is like August 1st. Ugh,
blinders on, boys. Blinders on.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, think about this, all right? So you're talking about an NHL team, which is 25 or 30 dudes, all, you know, all told. Dude, what about when you break it down to the NFL? Oh. And you got flipping 60 guys plus staff that you're going to have to keep tabs on. I actually feel as though that me being a cursed Buffalo Bills fan is going to continue because this year we're supposed to be good. So this, of course, is the season that's going to get canceled
because of it. Yeah, yeah.
But then also something that's crazy shit to me is when you see owners start talking about how they're going to put fans in the seats.
Oh, yeah.
Holy smokes. I'm not going to that. I love sports. I love it more than almost anything. I'm not going. I'm not going anytime soon, man. I got to feel good about doing that, and I don't know when I'm going to feel good.
Yeah,
I can't even imagine that next season.
I don't know.
Oh, no, they're talking about like...
No, I'm saying if it's okay next season, right. Would you go? I don't know, man.
Well, it all depends on what happens. I am just not at a point now where I'm comfortable being, even if they only let 14,000 people into Busch or whatever. That's still fucking a lot of people, man.
That is a lot of people still.
And with everybody taking this virus, some seriously, some not so seriously, like, I just don't want to risk it. I'll just stay at home and watch on TV, man, and not worry about it.
Well, the kick in the nuts that's coming for the NFL is the owners are going to be asking the players to, I believe, take a 35% pay cut for this season.
Oh!
Listen, we thought baseball got messy, okay? NFL is going to ask the players to take a 35% pay cut because they're losing out on all these revenues. Meanwhile, like you got the Dolphins owner, you got the, I think it was Tennessee owner, talking about we're going to have like 14,000 people in the stands or 20,000 people. This is going to be a shit show before it's over, boys.
Yeah, and then think about Goodell. They're what is he, the commissioner? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
What does he make a year?
Oh, well,
it's like, is it three figures in the millions or something like that?
Oh, I mean, he definitely, but I think
it's like 20.
But I think he gave his salary.
I don't know how he makes ends meet that way.
But. I mean, yeah. Yeah, you really worry about guys like
that.
He's going
to get the small soda.
I the feasibility of all of this is still something that I struggle with when I start to get excited about it. You know, because it just seems like there are so many variables. And then you see guys like Mike Trout running the bases with a mask on, with a pregnant wife saying,
he brought his pregnant wife around the bases with him?
She's still got pretty good foot speed.
So what do you, here, let's ask you this as a former player. So they come to you and say, I want you to take a 35% pay cut because we are not going to have anybody in the stands. You as a person know, all right, you are taking, your business is taking a hit. Yeah. But I also know that you're a goddamn billionaire and you're still going to be when this is all over. So how do you approach that?
This is easy for me. I say, you got it. I take a 35% pay cut, but you're going to add another year on the back end of my contract. You know, I'll scratch your back right now. Times are tough. When I'm 3 or 2 years older and I'm an unrestricted free agent or maybe this, that, and the other, we're going to sign that contract now, and it's going to kick in an extra year at full pay. So I'll give you your break now, but on the back end of this, you're going to scratch my back.
Is that what the Players Association is saying, or is that just something you just popped up?
I have no idea. That's just me.
Okay.
That's just my thoughts.
That would just be how you went after it.
Yeah. Do you want to talk any more about the virus and stuff coming back? Because, if you do, that's great, but I had something that I wanted to throw at Jamie that I heard yesterday. I think it was yesterday. Was Craig Button yesterday?
Yes, sir.
When you guys were talking about, and he was really comparing Pietrangelo and Colton Parayko.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And it was, hey, if he walks, hey, don't worry about it. Colton Parayko is the next man up as far as being another Pietrangelo. And he said absolutely not, which I agree with. But what are your thoughts on that whole subject, and what are your thoughts on Parayko in the future? Because I think he can be a flipping stud. I'm never in a million years going to say that he's going to be Pietrangelo, but your thoughts on it.
Okay, so this is where I do get heated in these discussions. And we had Craig Button on BK, my co-host, and I, we went back and forth a little bit, and I tried to educate both him and Alex on the differences between the two. People think automatically, well, Colton Parayko, look at this, right? Oh, he can skate. He's everything that you think he is, but he's not Alex Pietrangelo. And what I mean by that is Colton Parayko, in my opinion, may never, ever be able to quarterback a power play. It just, the instincts maybe aren't there. It just is what it is. He's a freak of nature. He can shoot the puck 110 miles an hour, but he's never going to be able to dictate how a power play works in that position. He doesn't have that offensive-minded brain, at least not yet. So I looked at it and I go, everything that Colton Parayko does currently, Alex Pietrangelo can do those things. He can play against the other team's top line. He can kill penalties. He can get on the power play. He can skate. He can do, you name it, right? But let's talk about the things, and this is the easiest way to go about it. Let's talk about what Parayko brings compared to Pietrangelo.
Right.
So if you do that crossover, everything's equal until can he quarterback a power play? Yeah, no, not really. What kind of leadership skills does he have? He's getting better. He's got a bigger voice, but he's certainly not the captain. And you take in some of the other intangibles of Alex Pietrangelo, just everything, his work ethic, what he demands of his teammates, all this other stuff, and you have a real big imbalance. The scale starts to tip to where there's way more things on Alex Pietrangelo's plate as far as pros rather than Colton Parayko. So people get horny. They get all excited because Colton Parayko is this massive Ivan Drago lookalike superstar, superhero from the blue line. He is. But, and I think Craig Button put this the best way. He goes, is Colton Parayko possibly a number one defenseman on your team without Alex Pietrangelo? Yeah, he probably is. But is he a number one defenseman across the NHL?
Yeah, that and was the comment I remember. Yeah.
That's where Alex Pietrangelo is. So it's tough to, you can't replace what you have there.
Right.
Can we talk a little bit about the guy that, I know his first name is Scott, last name starts with a P, he just won the Hobie
Brunovich.
Baker that the Blues signed. Did they sign him with the Alex Petro potentially walking in mind, or that just is a best available player with our draft pick, he was our guy kind of thing?
Look, and people do this all the time. Like when we traded for Justin Falk, well, that's Petro's replacement, right?
Yeah, I know. Okay. We did it. Yeah.
Yeah, we absolutely.
Yeah.
That's not the case, okay? When you have players of that ilk, of an Alex Pietrangelo, you don't look to replace them, right? Like if you look at some of the rock bands over the years where they lose a lead singer, they bring on somebody who's incredible, okay? Incredible, but it's not the one, the main guy, right?
Yeah,
like if you look at Queen, they brought on Adam Lambert. He does a fantastic job, but he's no friggin' Freddie Mercury,
right.
You know?
Sure.
So same thing to be said there. You may bring a player in, but they're not going to be that player. So to me, the Perunovic guy, yeah, you draft him, you've developed him, he's been in college, you see what you have now, and you hope that one day he becomes, a top four defenseman on your roster. With Alex Pietrangelo, guys, and I mentioned this too yesterday, everybody's like, well, he's getting up there, he's 30, Nick Lidstrom won 7 Norris trophies between the age of 30 and 40. Okay, now, I know.
That's
Nick,
dumb.
What about the other 3 years?
Now,
what
I know,
a puss.
And this is where I got, Craig Button and I laughed a little bit, and I understand Nick Lidstrom. You just dropped Nick Lidstrom. Okay, Chris Chelios did it as well. Not 7, but he won the Norris Trophy after being 30 years old. Al MacInnis, his only Norris Trophy ever, he won after the age of 30. And if you look at Petro's, his progress and his graphic of how his development has gone, it's spiking right now through the roof. Like last year, he was really good. He was great in the playoffs. This year, he's been phenomenal the entire year. So what do you think your next 2 or 3 years are going to look like? Maybe even 4. He's going to continue to rise. That stock is going to continue to grow for the St. Louis Blues. So you just don't replace that. You don't have a guy in line, like you say, to replace that. You may get a guy that's similar, and you hope that in 5, 6, 7 years they become something like Alex Pietrangelo. But to have the direct replacement or what you think is going to slot in there right away, that's just way too hard when you have a player that is that good.
And I don't want to go to a negative here after all that positive, but one of the other things that he brought up, and I think it was the same interview, was the Justin Falk contract. Mm-hmm. And he's not where he should be right now. And if he doesn't, Craig seemed to think that it would be pretty easy to dump his salary, to trade him.
That would have to be sooner than later, okay, because age will work against Justin Falk in that deal. It's another 6 years on the back end of this, I believe, at $7 million, somewhere in that area.
Baby.
Yeah, so in that contract, Justin Falk has a no-trade clause, so you can't trade him, but there's ways around that. You basically say, okay, you're going to be a healthy scratch for the next 25 games,
right?
Or we can trade you, but you got to sign off on it. So the guy's going to be like, okay, well, trade me then, right?
And then here's a handful of teams, and, you know, it'll open up the discussion.
They'll give him that luxury of pick 10 teams that you will go to or pick 10 that you absolutely won't go to, and they'll work their way through that. If he says no, then still that he doesn't want to do it, they can send him to the minors. They put him on waivers where any team in the league can pick him up, but you got to pay his salary and pick up his contract. Or he goes down to the minors, and most of that, almost 100% of that cap hit comes off your books.
Wow.
Now, you're paying him $7 million to go play in the American Hockey League, but you're getting some cap relief up top. So, and usually that works a trade somewhere because somebody, it never really ends up being horrible. So I think Craig Button was alluding to that, is he still has enough in the tank right now in the next year or two to get a good trade. If not, there's ways around it.
What about when it comes to the expansion draft and Justin Falk? Could that be a potential way that if he doesn't? And I really, pardon me, don't like the way.
Same here. I know what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I still feel like we don't know what we've got with this guy.
Yeah.
And he could really be something special. So I'm not trying to move dude out of town.
No, I get it.
But at some point, you're going to have to shed some salary, and maybe that expansion draft is a way to do it.
Listen, I can tell you what, that draft day is definitely circled on Army's calendar.
Yeah.
Because if Justin Falk just continues to be what he is now, which is just steady, just there, you know, but he's making $7 million. He's making top two defensemen money, and he's like sixth on the depth chart right now. So if he's still there, and they're going to put his name in there. And usually this is the way it would work, is they would say, hey, look, Seattle, we want you to take Justin Falk. I know it's $7 million onto your cap. I know you may not be thrilled with him right now, but guess what? We'll trade you a second rounder at the same time. We'll trade you a second rounder for, you know, future considerations. And Justin Falk will now go to Seattle, and Seattle will pick up a second round draft pick at the same time. So you're basically paying the team off to take your player. And that's what Vegas did. Vegas got a boatload of like first round picks because teams were trying to dump their players. Vegas was like, okay, we'll take your player and we'll take a first rounder. Thank you.
Would somebody like him be attractive to Seattle, Justin Falk? Is he a big enough name to go, hey, look who we got?
Well, look at what Vegas did. Did they have any big names that year? No, they had everybody's misfit toys, right?
Yeah. So, besides Fleury, the goaltender,
right?
Yeah,
you're right. He's the only
name I remember.
He's decent.
He's pretty good, yeah. But yeah, Justin Falk would be really valuable. You know, he's an older guy, a veteran guy. You get the leadership presence right away into a brand new locker room.
Yeah.
And if you look at his hockey stats, he's had a great career.
And depending on who else you pick up, he could be a captain or at least an A, something
100%.
Like that. And you know what? Speaking of Vegas, I watched last night, I'm so jonesing for sports, clearly, game one of the Stanley Cup Finals in 2018. Vegas and Washington.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. What an amazing game that was. Holy cow.
I miss
Oshie so much.
Dude, I have never in my life like pined so hard for like a Panthers-Oilers game. Like, I don't give a shit who it is. I just want to see dudes
Hurricanes,
competing.
Panthers, yeah, 12 people in the
did
crowd.
Did I ever tell you about interviewing Oshie when he was in town for the Frozen Four? And who was he with? Not Denver. Colorado? Who was he with? What college did he go to?
Oh, shoot.
North Dakota.
Well, he was in town for the Final Four, and it was just on the phone. But I think it was, and then I interviewed him later. Anyway, he was drafted by the Blues, and I guess he stayed in college one more year or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And I said to him something to the effect after he moved to the Blues, I said, man, I can't believe that you turned down the NHL because of all of the, you know, groupies in the NHL for a rookie. And he said, there's groupies in college, too. Don't you worry about it.
Yeah, don't kid yourself, Jeff.
As good, yeah, you're probably right. They're just a year younger.
That's as good as you think it is sometimes to be in the NHL, those college campuses, that's a whole other world.
That works, too? Does that work, too?
Oh, yes.
So,
oh,
as far as hockey fans, what are we – give us, Jamie, maybe like the next week or so, what we're looking out for, what we're hoping for, those kinds of things for hockey to resume hopefully in that first week of August.
Yeah, what we're looking for is the rest of the team's going to be coming into town here in St. Louis. If they're not already here, I believe that 98% of them are here right now. And then we're going to hope that they literally lock themselves into a room and get to training camp. And then, like we talked about earlier, we're going to hope that training camp gets finalized without any more positive tests that happen, and we get them up to Edmonton. And then I think we can breathe a little sigh of relief. And that brings me another sidebar here in my head. There's not much up there, but
right, yeah, no.
We got to make sure we hear get it wind out when it's there.
Yeah, I can hear the wind going through.
That's the hamster in his wheel. For the Blues, if I was Doug Armstrong, I would get a hotel here locally, maybe even Hollywood Casino, because odds are they're not slammed right now with things. Yeah. And say, we want an entire floor. And we're going to use this floor right now. We're going to start, we'll call it practice quarantining for when we get up to Edmonton. And I know you guys are going to hate it, and you're going to have to leave your wives at home, your girlfriends, your dogs, whatever it is. But the quicker we can adjust to this lifestyle, that gives us an advantage coming out of the gates in Edmonton right away. And I would have them isolated, and then they literally just take a team bus from that hotel down to Centene to practice and get their training camp done, and then they get right out of town, right up to Edmonton, and guess what? Life stays the same because they've already been doing it.
They've been doing it for a few weeks or
but
whatever.
Now that's my strategy. I'm a little, out there.
How many concussions?
None that I can remember.
How many concussions have you had? Spaghetti? Okay, so that's seven.
Take a side of mayonnaise.
And that Button dude had some glorious things to say about you. He was very nice to you about your career. I was like, are you sure it was Jamie Rivers you were
watching? I was actually surprised. I thought, is he thinking it's my brother?
That could be. No, he said some nice things about you.
Well, it's weird. You come back into contact with some of these people, and Craig Button was like a top NHL scout at the time, so I used to see him all the time at my junior hockey games, and now you get to talk about it. And BK was funny because he was like, I got a question. I got one more. I'm like, usually, shit. I don't know what's coming here.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with it. I'm like, whatever, man. I'm an open book.
Well, I thought it was really interesting because I know you watched Jamie when he played, whether it was here or the other teams besides Detroit that he was on. And I think I remember him saying something to the effect of he would like for you to see you play now without all the clutching and grabbing because you were a bit offensive-minded. Because you actually skated, not a lot, but you skated some shifts as a forward.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day as well.
Here's a little tidbit for you. I'm the second highest-scoring defenseman to ever play in the OHL.
Really?
Holy shit.
I had 121 points in a season.
Whoa.
32 goals, 27 power play goals.
Wow.
I had 36 points in 16 playoff games. So, yeah, when he talks about offense, that's what I was. And so it was
weird.
You
just happened to leave it in the OHL, I guess.
No. This is true. I got here.
You should punch him for that.
Yeah,
I will. He thinks he's far enough right now. Good one.
6 feet away.
6 feet. But when I got to the NHL, my very first cup of coffee, in 13 games, I had 7 points.
Wow.
I had 2 goals, 5 assists in 13 games.
Damn.
And, that was the path I was headed on. And then the coaching staff, the new coach, Joel Quenneville, great coach, but wasn't great for me. And we had Al MacInnis, we had Chris Pronger, we had Steve Duchesne, we had all these guys, right? And so he basically told me, listen, I'm going to play you with Al, and I don't want you to rush the puck. I don't want you to involve in the offense. Just get the puck to Al. We want you to be a physical guy out there. We want you to be just an absolute pest, run around, crush people, and if anybody hits Al, go after them, take them out, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So within one coach's meeting, I went from the possibility of being a premier offensive defenseman in the league to kind of turning into a knucklehead that just, plugs the holes in the boat. And after about 2-3 years of that, that's what teams thought I was.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what they're
he
signing.
He turned you into Roman Polak is what you did.
Pretty much, yeah. Exactly.
And I mean that as a compliment to both of you guys because I was always a big fan of Mr. Polak.
But then when teams would sign me and trade for me, they would be, we need a guy to come in here. We need a little more physicality on the blue line. We need physicality. Like, I never didn't like it. That's right. I love the physicality, but when you're putting up numbers like I had, even in the American Hockey League, I think my first year I had 53 points in 75 games.
Shit.
As a defenseman.
Right, yeah.
And then they're bringing me up here to kind of be a little bit of a knucklehead, block shots, and puck off the glass, basically.
Right.
It was weird. It was like fighting all of my instincts.
It's so funny that you say that because, and it sounds like, again, I'm blowing sunshine up your skirt, but I can see you getting the puck to McInnes or whomever, and there goes four guys skating up the ice, and here's Rivers basically gliding over the center ice. Like, I'm back here, guys.
I'm the safety net.
I'm sweeper. I'm playing sweeper. I remember that, like, and I was like, is he tired? Is he just not skating? No, this is what you were doing.
Hungover. Yeah. No. The hardest part that people don't understand is that was what I was my entire life, was this offensive guy who scored goals and was part of the offense. To change completely, to do a 180, the work physically and mentally that went into that was excruciating because you're totally – it's like taking a racehorse and turning them into, a backyard point where there's no room to run or nothing like that.
How about this? You made the opening day roster of the Cardinals. Congratulations. Now, we'd like you to bat left-handed, though.
Yeah, pretty much. And so the rest of my career I spent trying to learn how to play defensive hockey. And it was really, really hard, and that's – probably why I bopped around so much, because I would have spurts of not being very good at it because my instincts were to be a different player.
Mm-hmm.
And but by the end of my career, when I went to the Red Wings, and I know you guys hate this, but it's the first team. They were the first team to identify what I could do.
Right.
And so they said, listen, we have Nick Lidstrom. We got all these guys. We don't need you to carry the puck in it, but we encourage you to. If you want to carry the puck, get involved, whatever. You know, we need the physicality. That's why we signed you. We have nobody back there that's really going to hit anybody. We want you to do that. And it was great. My confidence got back. It got rolling. And I started playing some of the best hockey I ever did and became a defensive specialist to where years after that, I was playing against other teams' top lines, like playing against Joe Thornton's line and doing all this. And I'm like, I remember one time looking out there and having like Thornton, Marlowe, and like somebody else for the Sharks. I'm like, the hell am I doing? What is going on? Like, has my life come this full circle to where now I'm out here doing this?
So was it Ken Holland that put you in that position that said, hey, we don't need you to be the guy to rush the puck?
Yep.
But so you have Ken Holland in very high regard.
Ken Holland, Dave Lewis, who is the head coach that year, Barry Smith, the assistant coach, and the players. Okay. And I don't know if I've ever told this story yet. My first game as a Detroit Red Wing. We got Hull, we got Yzerman, Shanahan, Lidstrom, Chelios, Hatcher. Like, you just go down the whole
decent roster.
Yeah, amazing Hall of Famers. And then I was like in the corner. And they're like, yeah, and that guy.
And him.
That guy who signed up for fantasy camp here.
excuse me, kid. We're going to start the real game. Can you get out of here?
First shift. Maybe not for first period, for sure. Chelios gets the puck in the neutral zone. We're partners. So imagine I'm partnering with Chris Chelios. He zips it over to me. I take three hard strides, get up the red line. I rip a dump in. Impressive. Like, I got some heat on that thing, right? We get back to the bench, and we're sitting there, and I feel eyeballs looking at me. And I'm, like, looking down the bench, and another guy's looking down and looking back. It's Brett Hull. He keeps peeking down and staring at me. I go, what the fuck do you want? He's like, this is Detroit. We don't dump the puck in Detroit.
We got guys that can take it in.
And so I'm like, whatever, you know. And Steve Yzerman, as I'm dropping names everywhere right now, they're falling out of my pockets, literally. He's sitting beside me, and I'm still heated. I'm like, you know, screw that guy, whatever. Right, right. And he's like, nah, Ribs. He's like, seriously. You dump that puck, and he's like, nobody's getting it. He's
like, just keep skating because you're going to get it yourself.
And I go, well, what the hell am I supposed to do? He's like, you're not here because you're shitty. He's like, we wouldn't have signed you if you were shitty. He goes, take the puck, pass it to somebody else, regroup, go back to the goalie if you have to. He's like, we don't give up the puck. And that's when I was like, okay, so this is real. Like, I'm allowed to play. I'm allowed to touch the puck.
Right.
And so I started skating with the puck, making plays, didn't see a play. I'd cycle back, take it back to my own blue line, pass it over to my partner, get it back. Like, it felt so good. It was like, oh, my God, I'm home.
I'm in the OHL again.
I got long hair, and we're going to go party after. What? Wait a minute. Maybe still go party, but no long hair.
And you have, what was the necklace? Was it a puka shell necklace, or what was that?
That was a dog chain.
Dog chain, that's
yeah, it was a dog chain.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard a story about the Detroit Red Wings that's made me smile.
I know, me too. Oh, remember when we were talking about them getting eliminated from the playoffs? That
yeah, that's, that always, yeah, that always, because even though that they're in the East now, I still hate them like they're in the West.
Yeah.
I really, I mean, that is just... respect the plenty, but yeah. Man, we got our asses handed to him so much. I can't do it anymore.
I still pucker every time I see the Blackhawks. I mean, how long has it been since we've played an NHL game? And I still think that they're going to beat us the next time we see them. I still think they're going to knock us out of the playoffs every single time.
Do I have time for another quick one?
Yeah. I got nothing else.
Okay. So in the locker room, I'd mentioned to you, like beside me is Matthew Schneider. Beside him, Nick Lidstrom, Chris Chelios, Darian Hatcher. That's down the one side. Over to my left, right beside me, kind of caddy corner. Well, not caddy corner. Right beside me, but just over a little bit. Steve Yzerman is there. Henrik Zetterberg. Dominic Hasek, like we've got all these guys. And in the Red Wings locker room, they have those recessed cans, the lights that you go up, they're up in just like these.
And I dated a girl that had recessed cans. Anyway, go ahead.
Were they real or fake? Anyways, so we.
So dumb.
You would have to screw them in and take them out.
Anyway, go ahead.
And there was a. I was powering through it anyways. there was a light that was kind of right above me, and it was the only light we had in the corner, and you know. So one day I'm in that practice early and I got my stool and I'm up and I'm, ow, it's burning my fingers. I take the light out and I put it over on the shelf. So it's now, it's like almost pitch black in the corner. And Yzerman walks in. He's like, the hell? Where's the light? It's dark as hell. I go, Stevie, leave it out. He's like, why? I go, because if they don't know that I'm here, they can't send me down or trade me. And he's like, what? I'm like, look, watch the team meeting. He'll never look over here because it's going to be pitch black. He's like, okay, fine. So then Stevie played along with it. Matthew Schneider didn't care. He thought it was hilarious.
Right.
And sure as shit, Dave Lewis would look over and not even really know who's in the corner. So he just keep going. So I said, see, Stevie, if they don't realize that I'm here, they can't fire me.
Is there a light that I can pull out in the studio in there? Is that okay?
I was just thinking the same thing. What do I
got to
do?
So when I got traded from the Red Wings to the Coyotes, the trainer went in to try and put the light bulb back in. And Stevie goes, no, man, leave it out. He goes, I kind of like it dark over here.
That's so great. That's fantastic.
Well, boys, I say we do this again next week. What do you say?
Yeah, I'll try not to be so much trouble, guys. I'm sorry.
Oh, no big deal. You got a life. We don't have a life.
Yeah.
This is all we got.
That's all right. Yeah. Well, listen, we are available. The Last Minute Blues podcast available on all of your favorite downloadable channels. Download us, share us, and we'll be back again next week. Last Minute Blues podcast, Jamie Rivers, Donnie Fandango, Jeff Burton. Thank you very much for listening as always. Let's go Blues.
The Last Minute Blues podcast. Hear more at 1057thepoint.com.